Thank you. Good morning. I just wanted to keep my flowers with me because they match my hair. As people keep pointing out, I have got purple hair. And I love it. And I love just expressing who I am. And that's something God has done in me over the last 20 years it's been. Today, I wanted to look at grace. And I've entitled my study, Grace, You Were Never Meant to Be Contained. You know, Psalm 31, verse 8 says, You have not handed me over to the enemy, and I've set my feet in a spacious place. Actually, the words that we were singing earlier, I don't know whether, Kate, you could put it up, because of your cross. In the verse, it says, because of your cross, my debt is paid. Because of your blood, my sins are washed away. Now all of my life I freely give. Because of your love, I live. And that's what I hope to demonstrate today, actually, is how much God has given us and how much his grace covers us, and how much, actually, we live in his grace and how much we actually live. Now, it's taken me a long time to look at all these different things. When I started looking at grace, I went off on all many different roads. But I thought I'd start with just looking at the meanings of the word grace. Looking at the root word for grace in the Hebrew and the Greek languages reveals several meanings. Some of them we'll be familiar with, such as elegance in movement. We can all dance, we can all be elegant, especially us ladies. So. Beauty and charm, I think that's another thing that us ladies possess. Yes. Politeness, I think sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. Kindness, unmerited favour. And also, grace can be thanksgiving, like when we say grace, when we're going to eat our food, we're thanking God. Other meanings are less familiar. It can be meaning precious, healing, help, lifted up, refuge, strength, rescued, salvation. And one that sounds a bit weird, but I hope I'll be able to explain it a bit to you clearly. And that it means to camp or pitch a tent. It sounds really weird. So how do we get the meaning to camp or pitch a tent? I did quite a lot of research on the internet and I found a site called the Ancient Hebrew Research Center, and they have an e-magazine, and there was an article there by Jeff Benner, I should say, and he says that the ancient Hebrew word is made up of two roots, one of which is to pitch a tent or camp. To encamp was to provide a continuous wall of protection and a place that was separate. So to separate the inside from the outside. He also states that the Hebrew word can also be translated as precious or something of beauty and of value. Benner states that the Hebrews would have seen the camp of protection a graceful and precious place. To quote Benner again, he says, while these definitions can apply to the Hebrew word, which I'm not going to pronounce, because I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but it's spelt W-H-E-N, they do not completely convey the full emotion and spectrum of the Hebrew word. This is the problem with translating Hebrew into English. The English vocabulary is limited in how it can express the full meaning of a given Hebrew word. So with this in mind, I wonder how many of us truly understand the full meaning of the word grace and what the true impact is when we experience and live in God's grace. And when I say live in his grace, I mean really live in his grace. From Genesis to Revelation, we see a common thread running through the Bible. It's a red thread, the thread of God's grace. We see it in the shedding of blood. God made the first act of grace when he sacrificed the animals to provide the skins to cover Adam and Eve's guilt and shame. And he made the last sacrifice when Jesus shed his blood for our guilt and shame. Throughout the Bible, we see time and time again how God looks for a way to save mankind and to bring him back into a right relationship with him. There's so many stories in the Bible which illustrate God's grace that I've had trouble deciding which ones to choose. But I've got it down to three. The first one I thought we would look at Noah. And first of all, though, I just want to share a couple of verses from Psalm 113. Psalm 113, verse 4, it says, "The Lord is exalted over all the nations, his glory above the heavens. Who is like the Lord our God, the one who sits enthroned on high, who stoops down to look on the heavens and the earth? He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ash heap. He seats them with the princes of their people." And we're just going to be looking at the word favour and what that means as well. So going back to Noah, we're going into Genesis. Genesis 6, starting at verse 9. "The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart were only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, 'I will wipe mankind whom I have created from the face of the earth, men and animals and creatures that move along the earth and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them.' But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God." We see that Noah found favor with God. And the word favor in the NIV version of our Bibles is also translated into grace in the New King James Version. And favour is translated from the Hebrew meaning to stoop. Hence, that's why I chose Psalm 113. As we see from Psalm 113, our God is a God who stoops or humbles himself. He looks over the earth to see who he can bless and stoops down to lift us up. He reaches down to us and saves us from disaster and destruction. He saved Noah and his family from the flood. God looked over the earth and stooped down to save Noah. Now, the second character I'd like us to just quickly look at is Rahab. And if we go to Joshua 2, "Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. Go look over the land," he said, "especially Jericho." So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land." So the king of Jericho sent his message to Rahab, "Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left, and I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them." But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that led to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. And then if we go on from verse 12. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I've shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives, the man assured her. If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Now she said to them, go to the hills so that the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way. The men said to her, this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land you have tied the scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and unless you have brought your father and mother, your brothers and all your family into your house. If anyone goes outside your house into the street, his blood will be on his own head. We will not be responsible. As for anyone who is in the house with you, his blood will be on your head if a hand is laid on them. And if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear. Agreed, she replied. Let it be as you say. So she sent them away and they departed. And she tied the scarlet cord in the window. Rahab had helped the Israelite spies escape from Jericho and in return had asked them to spare her family and herself when they attacked the city. They asked Rahab to place a scarlet thread in the window as a sign of the oath they had made to spare her. Both Noah and Rahab and their families were saved from death by an oath or a promise, but they had their part to play in it. They had to be obedient to the promise. Noah had to build an ark, and Rahab had to place a thread in her window. If they had not been obedient, they would have perished along with everyone else. They had to fulfill their part in the agreement to be saved and blessed. Noah had to build the ark and go into it along with his family and the animals. Rahab and her family had to tie the thread in the window and stay in her house. Both places were places of safety and of grace. And we can link that back to being encamped or being in a tent or being in a camp where it's a place of safety and it's a place of grace. The last character that I just want us to look at is in the New Testament, and it's a woman caught in adultery. So we're looking at John 8. And it starts at verse 1 through to 11. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At dawn he appeared again in the temple courts, where all the people gathered round him. And he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say? They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, and here's that word again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." Now, in this story, we see a woman condemned by the world and by the law. What was Jesus' response to the situation? He stoops down and writes on the ground. He does not accuse, but when the accusations come against the woman, he stands up for her and challenges the accuser. He stood up for her. Here we see we have a God who not only looks and watches over us, but also stoops or reaches out to us and stands up for us. I think that's a wonderful thing to see in God. It's his saving grace. Here we can see that when the woman was brought to Jesus, that she stood in the safest place she had ever stood in, even with the threat of death on over her head, because she was under the grace of God. In the same way that Noah and Rahab had been in a safe place, this woman was under the protection of Jesus. However, also in the same way that Noah and Rahab had an active and obedient part to play, so did she. Jesus commanded her to leave her life of sin. It was her part of the bargain to stay safe. Now, in all these stories, God has been active in making a way out of death and destruction. He had stooped down and offered salvation, but it had been up to the individuals whether they accepted the offer and whether they were obedient to their part in the agreement. It had been their choice how they had responded. So, in their acceptance and obedience, what did they gain? Well, the obvious is life, a physical saving from death to abundant life. Jesus said that he came to give abundant life. Noah and his descendants and the whole earth were blessed and became many nations. I think that's pretty good abundant life. Rahab became the mother of Boaz and was an ancestor of King David and of Jesus himself. To me, that's just absolutely amazing. A woman who'd been a prostitute, would have been condemned by so many, was in the line to Jesus Christ. That truly is saving grace. Now, in our acceptance of Jesus, what do we gain? Well, the obvious answer is salvation. But in salvation, we gain unconditional love. A love which accepts you as you are, with purple hair. A love which says that you do not have to work or to be good enough and acceptable. Being under the grace of God gives you a merited favour. It's a place of covering. It's like when God sacrificed the animals to put those skins on Adam and Eve. He covers us. He covers us from our shame and our guilt. It's a place of covering where your debt is paid for you, where you don't have to be ashamed of yourself, where there is no accusation or condemnation, a place where someone else is standing in your place and standing up for you. That person is Jesus. It's a precious and beautiful place to be. It's a place of safety. It's a place where you can be yourself. And I really thank God for that. A place of life. So if you've acknowledged that Jesus is your salvation, have you experienced the full meaning of God's grace? And by that I mean, have you experienced that abundant life? Just going to share something of a testimony, really, something that God showed me last year, during a personal time with Him. I was feeling quite down and tearful and not really knowing why. And I had a picture in my mind's eye that I was in a dark corner where a sense of sorrow, fear, and failure prevailed. There was some light in the room, but it didn't penetrate the corner where I was standing. It felt like a prison. Then God broke in. He told me I was never meant to be contained. In that moment, it felt like God was telling me how much He loved me, that somehow it was okay to be me. I felt accepted that His intentions were never for me to be bound in the things that contained me. That He had a plan and a purpose for me from the beginning of time. That it's okay to come out of the corner and be me. Not to be restricted or contained by fear or failure or rejection. He was giving me permission to be the real me, not the Jane that the world had tried to shape me into. You know, standing up here really is a miracle for me, because if He'd have known me, well, Robin's known me a long time, I was quite a shy person at one time. And I was so full of fear and so bound up in it. Fear of failure. I was a people pleaser. I was so scared of getting things wrong that even at work, I was afraid to pick up the phone in case someone asked me a question I couldn't answer. So I was really bound. So I was really doing a lot of things to please other people, trying to get favour, trying to get merit through works, really. And we can't do that. Grace is unmerited favour. This process has been something that's been going on in me for years and years. It hasn't been an instant thing. Yes, I received my salvation, but He's been working in me and changing me. And it's been living and active in me. Jesus has really saved me from myself. He had not handed me over to the enemy and has set my feet in a spacious place. And I say that because I'm no longer contained. I'm free. I'm free to be me under His grace. And God's grace is not just about a once and for all saving grace. It's also about receiving life. It's not just about surviving the destruction. It's about living. It's about living in the grace and all it means and contains. It's about the freedom to be you, to be free from condemnation and the world's criticism. Jesus said He came to give life and life to the full, that abundant life. If we don't take hold of the fullness of His grace, we don't take hold of the fullness of life. We have to bring ourselves under His grace every day. Grace was not just one act, but an agreement and a promise for now. It is not in the past. It's not just the day you accepted Jesus as your Saviour. It is present, living, and active. Grace is a place of freedom. Freedom to be the real you. Freedom to receive the truth of who you are and what you have in Christ. Freedom to achieve all the things God meant you to do. To be free from criticism, condemnation, accusation, and judgment. It's a place of peace. Peace with God and peace with yourself. Now, God has done His part. It's up to us to do ours. To accept His invitation and to let go of the enemy's lies and to live the life He promised. We were never meant to be contained by fear or accusations. We were always meant to be who God made us to be. And that is in His image. And to be in relationship with Him. And grace gives us the opportunity to have that. Christ's invitation is not just to be saved from death and hell, but to live an abundant life. It's those words from the song. I just want to leave you with a blessing, and it's in Numbers, and it's 22 to 26. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace.